Great. So yeah, we're recording just so that we don't miss any comments or questions when it comes to compiling them for the FAQs document. We'll be monitoring the chat and the Q&A functions, both of which are available. Please feel free to submit any questions as we go, but if they could be saved to actually discuss towards the end of the session, we do have a fair amount of time towards the end of the webinar to discuss any specific questions. So that would be much appreciated. But yeah, feel free to add and provide comments as we go. Perfect. So just to sort of set the agenda of what we're going to be talking to you about this morning. So really, right, we want to provide you a bit of background and overview of the work that we've been doing in relation to the condition of the state and how we've got to the point where we are now with the survey that was sent out a couple of weeks ago. To also highlight some of the historical context, some work that's gone been done in the sector quite a while ago now, but just to really show that it is it would be quite timely for us to undertake some to take a review of research infrastructure across the sector at present. Then we'll be looking into how the survey itself has been developed, what we've been doing, and what questions we're looking to answer. We'll then delve a little bit into the survey that has been developed, some of the types of questions that are being asked. Then follow that with the next steps of what we're going to be trying to do with the work, and then finally, we hope to have about half an hour of Q&A if that's all, if that's needed. If people have specific questions that they want to highlight or any comments they have on the survey, we're obviously really, really keen to get feedback and how to make things as easy for you as possible. I know that seems like a contradiction at the time, at this time where burden is extremely high across the sector and resources is limited, but it's obviously really valuable to get your inputs on things like that. So hopefully a lot of you will be aware of the importance of research infrastructure and the estates that you work with and manage. And even if you're not, you're hopefully aware of how important it is to what goes on within the university setting. So whether it's physical buildings, capital equipment, or a data-driven infrastructure, it's an essential enabling and underpinning part of the higher education environment. And it is a critical resource to maintaining and growing an internationally excellent and healthy research ecosystem. We've noted that there have been challenges, so things like the reinforced autoclaved aerated concrete crisis that was within schools and across infrastructure, more in the press last year, but obviously has been a thing for the last for a little while now. But also the continued focus on financial sustainability within higher education. This has highlighted the importance of investment into infrastructure, and it also plays a key role in higher education providers being able to meet things like their net zero target and drive agendas towards greater accessibility and equitability within research. And DSIT, so our parent department within government, also highlights the importance of research infrastructure, infrastructure more generally within its science and technology framework that was published last year, highlighting that they're seeking to attract the best talent from around the world, build a skilled workforce for tomorrow's industries, provide infrastructure and investment to bring technologies to market, encourage a regulatory environment that supports innovation, and to increase infrastructure capacity to deliver the UK's science and technology ambition. But as I alluded to just now, there's obviously been quite a few challenges. The sector has been changing quite dramatically over the recent years, not through necessarily through faults, but though through external factors that are obviously playing providing significant difficulties for how universities are running and how they're being funded. Obviously, there's ongoing volatility, whether that's economic, political, or other, that's having a significant destabilizing effect across higher education. This impacts many of the other challenges that'll be highlighted as well, either directly or indirectly. I think the main one that I think most, or if not all, universities are really facing at the moment is around financial sustainability. And universities, they're having to make really drastic, dramatic cuts or reallocations of resources just to keep the lights on and basic functionality take place. Obviously, this then impacts on changing prioritization of investment into infrastructure across higher education providers, both in the immediate term, but also when they're looking more sort of strategically going forwards. Aligned to this, some of the effects that have come from increasing inflation rates, causing spiraling costs of things around sort of operations of infrastructure, their maintenance, and also construction of new infrastructure in parts of the state. So, for example, so utilities costs, I think, are the obvious one here on the when we're thinking about the operational side of things, but when it comes to the construction side of things. The cost of raw materials has been outstripping the CPI rate of inflation over recent years, which has obviously made universities have to potentially rethink about some of their longer term infrastructure ambition. The drive towards net zero obviously is really, really important, but and is a huge challenge globally, and all HEPs are playing their part in meeting these ambitious goals. Universities are taking their own approaches to be able to meet this, including how they can achieve a net zero campus, estate and infrastructure. Different universities will likely have different ambitions and aims to each other, and the unique nature and idiosyncratic nature of each university's infrastructure and estate will place different challenges upon the administration departments that are running and developing those. And so it's obviously something that is really, really important to try and balance, but and how that fits into the wider strategic aims of the higher education provider to be able to meet those goals, but also do it in a financially sustainable manner. And I think yes, a sort of a big recent one, as I alluded to, was the RAAC crisis that kind of hit the press. About sort of 9 months ago, it seemed to affect schools a lot more. But even at this point, 15 UK institutions, so higher education providers and universities, have had to close or partially close areas that have contained this material to essentially rectify some of the structural issues. I think when we put all of these issues and these challenges together, it makes it feel quite timely for us to try and understand what the current state is of university research related infrastructure, what the needs are in the sector to be able to meet goals, but also to be able to meet the current maintenance and backlog of investment that is needed to rectify issues going forwards, and also to help meet government ambitions both nationally and internationally. So I now want to sort of provide a bit more of a historical context to the condition of estate work. So there was a couple of pieces of work undertaken about 20 years ago or so. So these are So they're not necessarily super timely, but they were essentially trying to do sort of similar things to what we're trying to do with the condition of estate work. I'm going to introduce each report kind of independently. Is really looking at the historic investment within research infrastructure across UK higher education providers. So the first one is this one, which is a study of science research infrastructure undertaken by JM Consulting in 2001. I'm just going to sort of summarize the findings that they highlighted in their report. Obviously, if you're interested, I can share these documents with you. They're an interesting read, quite long. So if you've got some spare time, obviously it might be something interesting. But just to give you a bit of a summary of this, this report was reviewing the past investment into infrastructure for science and for science research within UK HEPs. Approximately 30% of the total university space was identified as being attributable to research, with about 34% of the cost of the higher education physical infrastructure attributed to science research. The report also noted that institutions were becoming increasingly responsible for financing their own infrastructure despite increased injection of public funds through infrastructure funding schemes. So at that time, that was the Joint Infrastructure Fund, or JIF, and the Strategic Research Infrastructure Fund, or SRIF, which I'll talk about again in the, on the next slide. One of the key, there were quite a few recommendations that came off the back of this report, including one that was really around the investment that higher education providers should be, what they should be investing into their estate on an annual basis to account for necessary renewal and replacement of buildings and assets and equipment. And they said that all HEPs should be investing approximately 4% of their insured asset value on an annual basis to do this. So following this, about 5 years later, JM Consulting then provided a report to Hefty that was called Future Needs for Capital Funding in Higher Education. So this was really looking at how the landscape had changed within that 5 year period, how those funding interventions had played, how much of an effect they had had on the sector, and specifically on the state of research infrastructure. The findings showed a spectrum of progress towards the achievement of a sustainable physical infrastructure across the sector, including enormous improvement to research infrastructure across the UK when compared to 5 years previously. And a lot of this was attributed to this increased investment within research infrastructure. They, at the time, back in 2001, they identified there was a significant backlog in when it comes to maintenance and repairs for research infrastructure. And although this backlog remained, it had reduced a fair amount, but increased investment was, further investment was still required, essentially, at this point. They also identified there were regional disparities and also differences in the need between different types of institutions. And they recommended that the continuation and consolidation of the progress would be dependent on continued public funding to the institutions post 2008. So that was essentially when the Strategic Research Infrastructure Fund was set to finish. And the recommendation from this report was essentially to continue that and extend that, although that didn't necessarily take place at that point. Since this point, there have obviously been a swathe of challenges within the sector, changes of government, changes of ways that student funding, funding of students work, changes in the funding system, so such as the formation of UKRI, along with other external factors such as Brexit and COVID. Additionally, there's different types of infrastructure now compared to what there were in 2006. So obviously digital and data-related infrastructure is more prevalent. And so with this in mind, we've been sort of thinking about how things are funded within Research England, whether they are suitable and what the, and this feeds in again to the needs of the sector and what those really are. So I'm going to change tack again ever so slightly and talk about how Research England and UKRI funds infrastructure specifically. So our main source from Research England, the main mechanism that we have to fund infrastructure is through Research Capital Investment Fund, or RCIF. I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail on the next slide, because that's obviously the main way that Research England funds infrastructure. And that is through an underpinning formula-based capital funding approach that supports the long-term sustainability of research and infrastructure. There are other ways that Research England also that can fund infrastructure funding. So we've got UK RPIF scheme that supports investment into world-leading higher education facilities and infrastructure across the UK. And yeah, round seven of that is just concluded, but that is very much more towards the development of new capabilities, new buildings, rather than maintenance, repairs of ongoing of estates and research infrastructure the universities already have. There's also other opportunities that Research England offer. So just a few that are listed here that can provide infrastructure funding on successful bids. But that isn't necessarily the be all and end all of that type of funding. And this obviously complements wider UKRI funding for infrastructure, whether that's through the UKRI Infrastructure Fund, the World Class Labs funding that is provided through research councils, equipment calls, as well as the funding of UKRI's own infrastructure. So that includes things like RAL Harwell, Daresbury, and some of the facilities that NERC has, so such their research ship and plane. We are aware anecdotally, though, that these are not the only sources of funding that universities use to fund their infrastructure and their research estate. But we're aware that these are some, well, ARTIFs in particular, alongside some of the unhypothecated funding that Research England can provide, are essential alongside other streams. So things like cross-subsidization or other income streams that universities have, they're all essential to enable universities to maintain and develop their estate. So I just wanted to come back to ARTIF very briefly. So obviously that's our main formula-driven funding approach that that Research England provide. And these are the four different aims. I'm not going to go through them in a lot of detail. You can see them here. But the main things are really around looking at ensuring there's long-term financial sustainability, and also hoping to contribute towards replacement or repair of infrastructure and premises, improving its usage and increasing sharing, and partnerships between different providers, different institutions, different organizations with this research infrastructure. So this is then just sort of just highlighting how ARTIF is calculated. So there are two streams that essentially feed into ARTIF. So we've got this higher education, or HEI, Research Capital England, which is proportional or to the sum of the quality-related research funding that the institution receives, alongside research income from other non-research council sources. So that can be from businesses, charities, etc. And then the other stream that feeds into that is the Higher Education Research Capital, or HERC, and that's proportional to research income that comes from the research councils, reflecting finance data for the most recent 3 years. So with all this in mind, looking back at the sort of historic work that has been undertaken, and how we fund research infrastructure specifically, we're then sort of thinking, well, what is the current picture across research infrastructure, across the states, across universities within the UK? What are the needs of perhaps, are they different based on different types of institution or where they're based? With all the current challenges, what are the needs going forward? How can things like financial sustainability and net zero be achieved concurrently? Are the mechanisms that we have to fund infrastructure, are they presently fit for purpose? And if not, what policy interventions may be needed to try and empower the sector to meet the needs of the sector, essentially. So this is essentially where the condition of estate project comes in. So there's a piece of work that we've been undertaking for a little while now to develop an improved understanding of the current state of research infrastructure, looking primarily at buildings and equipment within English higher education providers. It's an objective that was outlined in our strategic delivery plan, which is shown here. And it states that we're beginning work in 2023 to better understand the current condition and future needs of research infrastructure across English universities. Now, this, I'm sure a lot of you who work in the sort of more in the estate side and work with some of the data that you're pulling out to provide into returns such as the HESA EMR return, or work through some of the work you do with AUD. I imagine you're thinking, well, quite a lot of this information is already there, and to a certain degree, it is. And there's a lot of information that comes through into the Higher Education Estate Management Report that AUD puts out every year, and that's looking at the data that is provided via those HESA EMR returns. But this is a much sort of higher level, this is much higher level detail than is useful for researching and specifically for this purpose, because essentially we're not getting down to the granular level of what is used for research. They term things like that for infrastructure, it's either residential or non-residential, and non-residential is essentially too higher level for where research infrastructure fits in. Non-residential can encompass quite a lot of different things, including research infrastructure. Unfortunately, that means that some of the information, although some of it is very useful for us, that some of it is then, yeah, is essentially not fit for purpose when it comes to thinking about the need of the research side of universities. Part of the problem as well with some of the EMR data is that a lot of it is now non-compulsory, has been for the last few years. So it's not clear whether that the data that is available to us is actually fit for purpose or whether it's degrading in an ongoing fashion. So with all that in mind, that's where we've started to develop the condition of estate program. And we've had the majority of work so far has really been around this death-based research, trying to understand what data is available. So looking at that EMR data that's available through HESA, other sources of information that are available either within UKRI or Research England or out there within the sector. What information can we leverage to minimize and mitigate burden? Because we're obviously aware that burden within the sector is exceptionally high at the moment. And with this work, we are essentially adding to that, but we hopefully are trying, we're conveying that this the importance of the work and why we're asking for this information, but we're trying to manage that in a way that means that we're not overburdening the sector further. And also what anecdotal information persists across the sector. So a lot of that will be leveraged through some of the conversations that our colleagues within Research England have when they go out and visit institutions across England. So with some of this, we've done some done a bit of sort of a comparison, or just to highlight an example for you, we've looked at our unhypothecated funding stream, so our quality related research funding that we provide to the sector alongside our RCIF funding over a set number of years, just to see how that has changed. And then if we look at that with some lenses when it comes to how inflation has changed over recent years, it hopefully provides a bit of a rationale for why we're looking at the this piece of work. So I've got two graphs here. I'm not going to go into them in too much detail, but on the left it shows our quality related research funding. That is the unhypothecated funding that Research England gives out every single year to HEPS providers across England and the UK. And then on the right-hand side, we're looking at RCIF, so infrastructure specific funding. And so the orange blocks that highlight the overall level of QR funding that is provided annually to all HEPS. So that's the cumulative, not on an individual basis. So you can see that is increased from 2021, 22, 22, 23, when we had a big spike. That big spike was there when new budgets were approved for UKRI, where we got a long-term settlement. But generally, there has been very minimal increase, and it's essentially been stagnant and kind of flat increases or rollover funding for this unhypothecated funding year on year, and not necessarily following in line with inflation. And that can be seen as well with the RCIF funding, where this is funding that is specifically allocated for institutions to invest in their own infrastructure. And you can see in the first 6 years or so, it's essentially rolled over year on year, well below what the level of inflation was at that time. And even when it gets to 22, 23, and 23, 24, those increases that are being seen there have essentially been eaten up by a lot of the inflation rises over that period of time. And in essence, and in real terms, there hasn't really been any increase in RCIF allocations but we're aware that there are growing challenges, growing difficulties that universities are having to manage and factor in to their budgeting when it comes to their estates. And it's the clear implication that in order to finance any investment into infrastructure, funds are needing to be sourced from other places. And this is one key piece of the puzzle to understand the condition. So whether the funding streams that are available, perhaps whether they're suitable, sustainable, and whether they're sufficient for what the needs are in the sector. So we've also been looking quite a lot at the EMR data that is available to us. Really trying to understand the robustness and the integrity of this data, what gaps are present, and whether the change from it being a mandatory to a non-mandatory submission within providers, whether that has affected the quality of the data to a point where we can't actually really rely upon it. So that's some work that we're doing internally with some of the an our analyst colleagues, and that will basically work alongside some of the information that we'll gather from the survey. And then we've also been thinking about what lenses we can use to look across the data. So there's obviously some streams of some information that we have already available to us. So things like ARTIF funding by provider or other funding streams that are available through researching the so quality related research funding. But also things like track grading and place could be really useful to try and look at where to see if there are regional disparities or disparities based on different types of institution. So having looked at all this information, we realized that there were gaps within the information that was already being provided to HESA through the EMR, and that's where the survey that we have developed is really coming in, and that is to try and pick out some of the information that's missing so we can understand what those needs are for research infrastructure across the sector. So this, we have two main objectives for the survey. Firstly, to garner greater understanding of the current physical condition of providers' research infrastructure, the usability of it, its safety, its sustainability and its effectiveness, and how much that has changed over time. And then also to identify how much is spent on research infrastructure across providers, what the needs are, how they're prioritized, and what other sources of funding are utilized to invest into research infrastructure, because we're aware anecdotally that that isn't coming purely from the funding sources that we are providing. We're also using this work to gather necessary evidence about the research infrastructure landscape in English providers, and using that for when it comes to our spending review submissions into government, and trying to make a more compelling case for increased infrastructure funding. And without that evidence, it'll be really challenging for us to be able to say, look, we need more funding. We also are hoping that the survey is able to highlight the importance of the investment into research infrastructure and reaffirm that it is a fundamental underpinning element of the wider research ecosystem. So I'm not sure how many of you have already had a chance to look at the survey. It was launched about 2.5 weeks ago now, but it's essentially split into three categories or three sections. So the first one is the non-residential estates data, and that's trying to link back into a lot of the information that is already provided within the EMR to HESA. And we want to leverage that as best as we can, determine how much of a HEPS non-residential estate is related to research, what its overall value is in its current condition and current performance. The second category or the second section is around recent infrastructure funding. So that's really to get a high-level understanding of how much HEPS have been investing into infrastructure over recent years, and what funding streams they are using. So whether that's cross-subsidization of teaching income, other investment income that universities are providing, or whether that's all coming from Research Council funding. That's something that we're not necessarily aware of, and it's obviously going to be different based on different universities. But we're trying to get that understanding of the complexity of how university the funding their infrastructure go at this present time. And the final category is really around future capital funding. So that's what the needs are for providers going forward, specifically in relation to their research infrastructure. And that's a we're looking at that both from a steady state point of view. So what is needed to get to full utilization, but also how what is needed for your provider to meet its structure, its strategic infrastructure ambitions. So that's kind of I'm just yeah I've kind of already spoken about a lot of this, but within each section we've broken it down into a mandatory part and a non-mandatory part, and this was try and manage some of the burden that is coming from that we're aware that the sector is really really under at the moment. The core questions have been designed to give us that essential information that will be needed for when it comes to pulling together information and evidence for spending review cases to government. And I think that is really what the most important information that we can gather through this. There are also optional questions, and I would like to highlight that these are completely optional. They are not, we have said they're optional, but we actually want you to fill them in. If you just don't have time or you don't have the information for those, that is we totally understand that. So that yeah, that's why we've broken it down to these two sections to highlight that there are these bits of information that we really love to know and will really help us going forward. But then there's also these other additional bits that would be really useful and would ha help provide a lot of color and context to the sector as it currently stands, but they are completely optional. So the survey is being hosted through Citizen Space, so that's the software that we use for all our external survey engagement. The link is here. I can also resend it to everyone after the webinar if needed, but yeah, it's fairly simple interface to work with, and I've just sort of wanted to show you different type of questions that we've got included within the survey. So obviously on the left-hand side is more that's the home interface that you'll see when you go to the link. It gives a bit of an overview and a lot of the documentation that is associated with this, including the recordings of the webinar and the presentation slides will be available there. And then on the right-hand side is the sort of start, the different types of questions that we're asking. So a lot of the information that we're asking for is quantitative, because we feel that that is probably the easiest and information that we can gather, and hopefully that is information that providers should have more read. They should be able to access more readily than other kinds of qualitative information. Below each question, for some of them anyway, we have tried to describe exactly what it is that we're asking for. If that's not sufficient and you need further clarification, obviously you can ask here today, or you can follow up with emails to the research policy inbox, and we'll happily clarify that and also add that to the FAQ document that will be developed. There's also questions that are asking for percentages to be provided based on different criteria. We try to link those in as much as we can to the EMR data that is already provided to HESA. And so a lot of the descriptions will be linking back into that where we can. If not, then we'll provide we've provided or we hope we've provided descriptors to actually detail out what it is that we want. There's also questions where it's multiple choice, or you can select as many as required. So for this example, where this is really looking at the types of funding that are used for maintenance and refurbishment of providers' existing research estate. There's also options to certain questions where we're asking for rankings. Again, we're trying to minimize the amount of qualitative information that is being provided. However, there are free text boxes in the non-mandatory sections for each section if you did want to provide any additional detail or any additional context to some of the questions that you've answered. However, as I said, that those boxes are completely non-mandatory, so you don't have to provide anything if you don't want to. So very briefly, just to highlight the next steps of the project. So we're working internally to look at the reliability and robustness of existing data sets. So that's really around the HESA EMR data, and how we can leverage that data in conjunction with the survey data that will come in to help pull out any trends and themes. The survey is currently set to close around mid-May. Now, we are aware that that is quite a time frame. We had a lot of feedback yesterday about that. So we are reviewing whether we how far we can extend the survey time frame just to ensure that we get great like really good coverage across the sector, and but also allow providers enough time to be able to pull together the information as necessary. Once all that information comes in, we'll analyze that as well in conjunction with the HESA EMR data to and whether we can develop any metrics with some of our analyst colleagues internally to help inform the needs of the sector. Once we've got all that information, then we'll then start to investigate discussing and having interviews with certain providers across the sector, if they've got any specific challenges that are unique to them that might be really useful as case studies to that'll be something that we'll be doing once the initial analysis of the data has been completed. Following all this, we'll then hopefully be able to provide a report to the sector to highlight our findings, any conclusions, and whether there's any recommendations that we'll have. So that is me done now. So I'm going to stop.